Speaker tonight, Bill from Conscious Contact Group of Doylestown.
Good evening, everyone. My name's Bill. I am an alcoholic. I really appreciate you guys having me out here tonight. It is an honor to be up here talking to you guys tonight, and definitely an honor to be asked to speak at this meeting. I've seen some of the best speakers that I've ever seen in my life at this meeting, so I definitely am humbled and honored to be up here talking to you guys tonight. I do have a sobriety date. My sobriety date is July 29th of 2016. I just recently celebrated 6 months of sobriety, and I don't take it for granted being asked to come up here because I've been through the rooms before. And I've taken things for granted before, and I've had opportunities that I've thrown away plenty of times before. So now when someone asks me to speak, I don't take it for granted. I always say yes, and it's just not something that I take lightly. I do have a sponsor. I have a home group, Conscious Contact Group, in Doylestown, PA, Saturday nights, 8:30, if anybody would ever like to come out. This is my first time speaking for an hour, so bear with me. I'm going to do the best I can up here and hopefully say something that maybe helps somebody out here. To the new guy, welcome. That's awesome, man. It's really great to have you. And, so what it was like, I am 29 years old. I grew up in a really good family, in a really good neighborhood, and I've been completely blessed in my life. Never wanted or never needed for anything. If you would have talked to me a couple years ago when I first had my, first entry into the world of recovery, I would have been happy to tell you that I had it rough. My dad didn't like me. My mom is nuts. And I would have been happy to, blame all these outside circumstances and people and places and things that I was around that, caused me problems in my life. The truth is, I lived a life based on self-centered fear. I lived constantly in fear. I was only ever thinking about myself. Even today when I'm not spiritually fit, that's still my default. So I came from a good family, and I have a younger brother and sister, parents who were there for me in every way, parents you could ever hope for parents to be there for you. I don't have alcoholism in my family. It's not a genetic predisposition in my family. My brother and I are both in recovery and both have this thing. I had a pretty normal childhood. I never really, at least before I tried any substances, alcohol, or anything like that, I never felt weird at all. I was a pretty normal kid. I had friends. I was involved in sports, and I was just a normal kid in suburban America with a happy childhood, to be honest. One thing that I can definitely say stretches back as far as I can remember is a fear of being alone. Fear of being alone, and that has probably guided most of the decisions in my life. This overwhelming fear. I remember the first time that I had a drink. It wasn't because I necessarily wanted a drink. It was because my friends that I was hanging out with, they were all starting to drink, and I didn't want to be left out, and I didn't want to be left behind, and I didn't want to have no friends, and I didn't want to be a square, I don't know who says square anymore, I drank because I wanted to be a part of. I did. I wanted to be a part of. And even in a group, even in a room filled with my friends, I could still very much feel alone. I could still be full of fear, totally in my head. Honestly, the first time I drank, it wasn't this overwhelming sensation. But at one point pretty early on, the first time I really remember getting drunk, I do remember, and looking back at it now, like, I would classify it as a spiritual experience because, you know, I did have these fears and these anxieties and these thoughts that were racing in my head. And am I good enough? What does he think about me? What does she think about me? And all these different things, constantly just afraid of the world, feeling like this place is just full of threats and people who are talking about me, or, you know, the whole world, all they're doing is thinking about me, like they have nothing better to do, you know? So I remember for the first time, like when I really had that first experience where I got the effect produced by alcohol, it was awesome. I loved it. It was totally awesome. I was completely free of all my inhibitions. I felt like I could talk to anybody. I felt for the first time like I was the guy, I felt like the guy that I wanted the world to see me as. And it was really, really profound for me. I never wanted to live another day in my life without that from that point on. And I chased it through various substances and, you know, whatever. But I always was in constant pursuit of that same feeling, this completely all-encompassing feeling like for the first time everything was okay. Nobody was judging me and everybody actually liked me. Like, even though people would tell me when I wasn't drunk that, you know, Bill, we like you. We've been hanging out with you for years. You know, I still have these doubts. Like, oh no, when they go home, they're talking about me. You know, so yeah, I loved that feeling, man. I did, and I loved everything that came with it too. You know, I was never I didn't lack for friends, but I was never the coolest guy in high school. I was never, you know, the fastest guy, the smartest guy. I wasn't the guy getting all the girls, but what I did love was that, like, people knew that Bill could party. you know, I remember the first time, like, well, I won't even tell that story. I'll try not to go into other substances. Yeah, I love being at the center of all this. So as self-centered as I was, and as much as I thought everybody didn't like me, being in the middle of the lifestyle, you know, I absolutely loved it. And I love that it seemed like to me, everybody all of a sudden accepted me, for being in the middle of this lifestyle. So, I will talk about it because it's my story. I remember the first time. So I sold drugs when I was in high school, and I absolutely loved it. I absolutely loved it. Like, I remember the first day in ninth grade, everybody around school was talking about, you know, everybody knew Bill had bought his first ounce of weed, and like, so everybody was hitting me up, and all of a sudden, I found myself, like, getting called by people who didn't normally call me. And I felt like, oh, man, like, this is cool, you know? You know, I liked it, man. I really did. So, again, like, much like that first drink, I basically decided, you know, maybe not consciously, but I dove in, like, totally feet first. right then... Right then and there, you know, and I did. I love the attention. I was never, for the next like 10 years, I was never without company. My phone never stopped ringing. And I just loved it. I loved being at the center of it all and actually feeling like people needed something from me. And like I had some sort of power, this false illusion of power. What that did for me is it put me in a lot of risky situations. It totally masked this fear that I have deep down inside, again, of being alone. And it was this artificially created environment where, you know, I'm not alone. I'm the opposite of alone. But really, like, once all the stuff's done, the party's over, you know, I'm all out of whatever it is that I'm trying to get rid of. The phone stops ringing. I'm still left with me. And I hate me. And the longer my life progressed with me covering up in artificial ways the way that I felt inside. The deeper and deeper I got, the more self-centered I got, and I just became a mess. So I graduated onto some other substances, you know, the same stuff that's killing everybody out here. That dominated me, man. It really did. It started with the drink for me, but it ended with that. That totally ran my life into the ground. I once again, I figured I'm not so like I. Sorry, I'm a little nervous. So I remember distinctly. I remember distinctly when these pills started coming around in high school, and everybody was talking about them, like these you know, these Oxycontin. And it was a big deal, and everybody started doing them. And I was one of those people who tried them. And again, at first I just didn't want to be left out, you know? But very quickly, within a span of like a month or two, I didn't care who else was doing them. I loved them. I loved the way they made me feel. And that's what I dedicated my life to for the next 6 or 7 years. I spent hundreds of dollars, went through every day. I went through numerous arrests and was completely devoid of any sort of spirit, personality, or anything on the inside. I didn't have anything left. You know, I still had a roof over my head. I still lived with my parents. I didn't have any friends. I didn't have any money. And I was just completely broken and bankrupt. But I was okay with it as long as I was getting what I needed to get every day. I went through this miserable existence in college where I couldn't get out of my own way. I graduated school on time, and the entire time I was there, all I wanted to do was leave class, and I did. Every day, I just kind of plowed through class. I would sleep through class, do the bare minimum, and then I would ride the train back home so that I could sell more of what I was using so I could use more of what I wanted to use. And that was like, that was my life for 5 years. And again, I don't know, every day was a day where I just wished it would all end. I really did. I wish that my life would just be taken. I'm too much of a coward to ever kill myself, but you know, I just wish for the end every day. At the time, unfortunately, but in retrospect, fortunately, it never came. But, yeah, I plowed on for a couple years like that. And all the while, I think I'm a good guy. You know, I think I'm a good brother. I think I'm a good son. I think, you know, that I'm a good student, a good boyfriend, a good friend. Really, I'm none of those things. Every single person in my life is just either an obstacle or a vessel to get me to what I want. And I think this entire world is built to please me and to satisfy every desire that my ego has. You know, and I'm just, I'm a miserable prick, you know? And so fast forward to May 24th of 2012, I was arrested and I was put into a Bucks County jail, and I didn't think I was getting out for a long time. I ended up spending a few months in there, and at the time I thought, like, this is my bottom. You know, I had been arrested a few times before. I had gotten the DUI. I had, you know, been arrested on some minor charges before, but this time it was something serious. And I was scared crapless, you know. I was completely sick, withdrawing for a couple weeks when I first got into jail. And I mean, I was totally, totally broken. I mean, I spent the first night not knowing whether to cry or crap my pants or what. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I spent the next 2 weeks just sweating, crapping, and throwing up all day, every day, not sleeping, to the point where, like, I'm slamming my head against the concrete cell block wall to try to knock myself out just to get a wink of sleep. And, you know, part of me, like, at that moment, like, part of me, you know, looking back, like, I thought, I'm a college graduate. I'm too smart for this, you know? But, like, you know, it was still, like, me with this false illusion of some level of control or, I don't know. You know, I don't know what it was. But, so I spent a few months in there, and needless to say, I didn't like it. You know, jail wasn't fun. It wasn't necessarily, like, don't rape me scary. It was like, this really is depressing scary. Yeah. So, once again, like, you know, and again, like, I still have this big ego, I guess. You know, I thought I was broken, but I still had this big ego and thought, like, I'm this, you know, lone wolf and I can do it all on my own, blah, blah, blah. You know, me being this tough guy, my dad ended up paying for a good lawyer who helped me out and got me into a rehab facility after a few months in jail. And that's, you know, that's how I got out. So anyhow, I didn't know anything about recovery at the time. I had heard about NA, AA, and that was about it. I hadn't really gone to any meetings. I didn't know what it was all about, but I knew for the first time, like, I really did come to grips with the fact that maybe I have a problem. You know, I didn't know, like, the extent of the problem, but I knew I didn't want to keep getting in trouble. I knew that I hated my life, and if something didn't change, that I was gonna die, you know, either at the hand of alcohol or at my own hand, you know. So I got into a rehab facility, and you know, these guys came in for these outside meetings. They would bring AA and NA meetings into the rehab. And at this point, like, you know, I thank God, like, I had been sober for a few months at this time when I was sitting in rehab. Like, I don't know if I would have been as open-eared and wide-eyed if I had been there, you know, a couple days off the street. So I give people a lot of credit for being able to sit there and listen. But in either case, I was desperate. I was desperate, and I finally was willing, I think, to surrender. You know, I heard these guys come in, and they would get up in front of us, and they would speak, and they all seemed like really happy guys. I mean, like, I could see and hear in their stories that, like, they had done some of the same stuff that I had done, too. And they had felt a lot of the same things that I had felt, too. And, you know, it was really, I got to tell you, it was, like, really a weight off my shoulders to hear people talking about this disease, and to actually, like, identify and put a label on it, because, you know, for the last, like, 10 years, I had been walking through my life and thinking, like, nobody else felt like me, nobody else had this fear, these anxieties, and, you know, just all these little weird things, like this terminal awkwardness all the time, always feeling uncomfortable and always feeling awkward, no matter what the social setting, you know, and I just didn't know that there was a thing. I didn't know anything about alcoholism or addiction at the time, and it was really nice to hear that not only was there a label or a diagnosis for what I had been feeling all my life, but there was potentially a solution there, too. You know, I wasn't overly hopeful or overly optimistic about it, but I thought, like, maybe, okay, like, maybe I'll do what these guys are saying that they're doing and I won't get in any more trouble. But as far as, like, you know, imagining a life in recovery where I'm actually having fun and doing things and building a life, like, I didn't think any of that was possible. I really didn't. I thought, like, the best it was going to get was, like, I was going to just be a loser who doesn't use or drink. I wasn't going to have any friends. I wasn't going to laugh ever. My life was going to be boring. It just didn't sound fun, but it did sound better than the way I had been living. So I figured I would give it a shot. skimming through a little bit, you know, it's funny, like, I didn't look at it that way at the time, but, you know, the day that I got arrested was probably, like, one of the greatest days of my life. It wasn't one of the, you know, most fun, but it was a pivotal turning point in my life where, you know, they say that God shows up in our lives in mysterious ways, you know, and often that's in the form of institutions, police officers, what have you. And I truly do believe that to be the case today, you know, looking back at it. After going to some meetings and then getting into this recovery process out of rehab, I found that my life started to get a little bit better. I made some friends. Everything was really weird at first. Everything was really awkward. Like, I was a grown adult. I was 24 years old coming into recovery, and just the act of, like, having a conversation and looking somebody in the eyes was completely foreign to me, and really, really frightening. But sure enough, I did it. You know, I would go to meetings, I'd get my hand up, let them know who I was, where I was at, you know, all that good stuff. And along the way, I met some friends, friends that I still have today. And, you know, I got a sponsor. I started doing some steps. Well, at least I thought I was doing some steps. I would have told you at the time I was doing some steps, but yeah, I don't know if I was. I was going to a lot of meetings, and I stayed sober for a while. I stayed sober for a few years. My life got really good on the outside. It got really good on the outside. On the inside, after the first year, I would say I started getting sicker. At first, I would just had this like sense of awe and wonder going into meetings. Like, I just had this like really grateful to not be in jail gratitude about me. I was really just happy-go-lucky, appreciative, and grateful for everything. But like, you know, as with everything else in life, the second that like the fear of consequences go away, the second that there's no longer this thing over my head where if I, you know, if I mess up, if I take a drink, I'm going to go back to jail kind of deal. Like, as soon as that's over, my gratitude starts going by the wayside. You know, they also, you know, they told me, don't get into a relationship for the first year of your recovery is what I heard. And I didn't, but right after I had a year in sobriety, I got into a relationship. And I didn't, you know, again, I didn't realize it at the time, but like this relationship became my higher power. It did, you know, like this relationship provided everything that I looked for in the bottle, in the drug, whatever. It provided a sense of ease and comfort. It did. I felt okay about me because I got validation from another human being on this planet, specifically a member of the opposite sex. And that was awesome. And it was like all-encompassing. You know, it felt great. I love my girlfriend, and she loved me, and we were all happy, and everything was cool, or so it seemed. You know, all these things started coming into my life. A job. I got my license back. I got a car again. And then I got a better job. And then I got a better job. And, you know, this time last year, I was making more money and I had more things materially than I had ever had in my entire life. I did. And I was probably more miserable than I was on the day that I got arrested and went into jail. I was spiritually sick. I was completely devoid of any relationship with God. And I wasn't doing any work. I wasn't sponsoring anybody. I wasn't doing any steps. I was going to meetings and I was judging people. I was, you know, taking everybody else's inventory from the back row. And, you know, I thought like I had arrived. I thought like the meetings were lucky to have me there. I had this like really, this really just disgusting view of recovery and what it was really about. I did. You know, I thought it was, I thought recovery was there for me and to make my life better. And you know, how wrong I was, you know. So after a few years of being sober and not living this way of life that's outlined in our big book, you know, I got what is basically guaranteed to us if you're not going to do the work. I relapsed. You know, I thought I have things under control now. And I thought somebody whose life looks like mine couldn't possibly still have a problem. I make a lot of money. I have a girlfriend. I have a car. I'm about to move out of my dad's house. Yeah. So clearly I had it going on. You know? I thought I had re-established this illusion of control. So this time, it wasn't the drink or it wasn't the substance of choice that I preferred before, but I went to a doctor and I got the medicine that I asked for. I went in and basically thought that, like, if I got put on this one medication, that I would really be an all-star at work, you know? I'm sure you can imagine which one it was. But yeah, I mean, needless to say, I lost my clean date that day. And for the next couple months, you know, everything seemed okay. I felt that same sense of ease and comfort again for a few months. And fast forward a few more months, everything's not starting to look so good. The things that I had built up in recovery, close relationships with friends, a relationship with my girlfriend, this job, you know, all these things, they started seemingly drifting away. The relationship wasn't so good anymore. My relationship with my employer wasn't so good anymore. My relationship with my friends weren't what they once were. And I couldn't find happiness for the life of me. I couldn't find any sense of peace and calm for the life of me. And every day was just get up and do and continue to serve myself. And it all kind of came to like a screeching halt one day in the summer of last year when I think it was Father's Day. And I spent the day, if you would like hear about my day, you would have thought it was like a beautiful day. And this is like what, I don't know, this is like what a good life is supposed to be about. I spent Father's Day down the beach with a couple of my family members, with my dad, with my brother, with my sister, with my stepmother. And, you know, we had a great time. Well, everybody else did. I sat there miserably, you know, again, just like the prick that I was before. You know, I called one of my friends in the program, and for some reason, I felt it necessary to let it out. I called him, and I said, oh, yeah, you wouldn't believe it. I said, on the way down, my dad was playing music, and he seemed so happy, and like, I'm just like, shut up, you know, and then they want to stay on the beach for more than 2 hours, like, I'm trying to go home, you know, and I'm like, telling them about all this stuff that's going on that, like, again, like, sounds like a nice day, looking back at it now, but with how, like, just spiritually and mentally and emotionally drained I was at the time, it seemed like the worst thing ever. It seemed like punishment. And, you know, my friend's like, are you okay? Because, you know, nobody had known that I had relapsed at this point. That was another thing. I kept it from everybody. So I said, yeah, I'm just, you know, having a rough day, whatever. For whatever reason, I got home later that night, and I couldn't keep it in anymore. I called my friend. I called my brother, who's also in the program, and I was just bawling my eyes out, you know. Nothing, like, particularly was wrong in my life. I wasn't at risk of going to jail or anything. My relationship was on the rocks. But otherwise, like, my life seemed pretty good, but I was so sad and broken, and that feeling of loneliness that I sought to escape when I started drinking, you know, 10 years beforehand, was back, and it was back hard. And the same feeling of selfishness, it was back, and it was back hard. And I just couldn't take it anymore. So I reached out for help. I got honest with the people close to me about it. And, I didn't go back into a facility or anything. And I didn't stay sober from that day on. It took me a few more weeks of living in that pain and misery to really get desperate enough, to try something different. And I will say that, you know, there's the principle that they talk about, like, attraction, not promotion. I will just mention that, so my brother's in the program. My brother had problems similar to me, worse than me. And I saw my brother, come into AA, and, you know, while me and my friends, were in the other fellowship, sitting in the back of the meetings, judging people, and just talking crap about everybody and thinking that our crap don't stink and all this stuff, and really like not doing any work, just showing up at meetings, thinking that we're recovering. While all this was going on, I'm talking to my brother on the phone, and he's talking to me about like, hey, stop judging everyone, love and tolerance for all. That's our code. You know, he's telling me about this relationship he's established with God. And, you know, I knew my brother before AA, and I knew he felt, you know, he was as agnostic, as I was going into it. And, you know, he's talking to me about these principles of selflessness, loving others, you know, caring for others, like as if they were a sick or dying loved one. And I'm hearing these things, and he's like talking to me, and he's like, you know, my brother, when we were growing up, like, on a good day, he couldn't string a series of words together to form a pretty cohesive sentence. But now I'm talking to him, and while I'm feeling all miserable, I'm hearing this guy on the other end of the line, and he's, you know, he's speaking very eloquently, and he's very articulate. And you know, he's telling me all these things, and it sounds so great. That like when I get off the phone with them, I'm like all charged up, and like I'm thinking, I didn't know any of this existed. I figured I would switch fellowships. Not that for one second do I think that the other fellowship did me any wrong or anything. It works if you work it. I didn't work it. That being said, I came over to AA. And since that point in time, 6 months ago, my life has done a complete 180. I don't have nearly as much materially as I did this time last year. But what I do have is a relationship with God, is the ability to think of others and actually put them before myself, and the ability to be there for others, and at least when I'm in fit spiritual condition, be a vessel for God and love everyone as if they were my brother, you know. So when I got here, it was just as weird for me to start coming around this new fellowship and make some new friends and make some new contacts and whatever, and get hooked up with a group of guys. It was just as awkward as it was the first time around in the other fellowship. But things seemingly like I was pretty desperate. So, I fought through the awkwardness pretty hard. I got a sponsor, I got a home group. I learned about some of these principles in here. Me and my sponsor, we started going through this work, you know, and for somebody who, you know, I know did the same kind of stuff that I did, felt the same way I felt, you know, not that long ago himself, you know, for my sponsor to take the time out, to take me through this work, was something where it's basically, you know, it's the ultimate, in service, you know, somebody doing for me what I can't do for myself. Somebody doing for me something that I could never repay them for. And, you know, for somebody who has lived 28 years on this planet, like a completely self-centered maniac, to be a couple months ago on my knees in a pizza shop, asking to become one with God, asking for God to show me his will, and turning my life over to God, that's a pretty powerful thing, man. When I came in, I thought I had to find a sponsor who like had a lot of clean or a lot of sober time. I thought, you know, I don't know, I need somebody who's got like years in the program. You know, I need somebody who's older, somebody who has what I want. As if anything I've ever chosen in my life has ever worked out at all. So, you know, I was like, I'm in a meeting one night and like I'm looking around trying to make my selection. Who's it gonna be, you know? And this guy that I talked to a couple times who's younger than me, you know, how dare he? think he could help me. He comes up and I tell him, I said, yeah, I'm looking for a sponsor right now, and I think I was like looking around him to look at an older guy. And, you know, he says, well, if you want, we could sit down and I'd be happy to take you through the work. And, you know, right then and there, I knew, like, my ego was telling me, like, find somebody older, find somebody with more time sober. And for that exact reason, I said, absolutely, because my ego always takes me to the wrong places. So we did. We started aggressively going through the work. And within a period of about 6 to 8 weeks, we had gone through the first 11 steps in this book. We sat down, we did an inventory, I did an inventory, and we went over it together. And on a weekend night, you know, this guy, he's a couple years younger than me, I'm sure he has better stuff to do on a Saturday night than sit down with me, but yeah, maybe not. He took 4 or 5 hours out of his night that night to sit in a Perkins with me, and for me to attempt to spin all the people that had done me wrong and how, you know, it was their fault. And, you know, every single time it got redundant very quickly. He was telling me, yeah, what's your role in it? Why are you so selfish? And every single one. And I thought for sure there's got to be like one or two in here where they were the other person's fault. No. Completely removing myself from the equation. A friend of mine in the program says that, you know, this is about addition by subtraction. Whereas I thought before that recovery was supposed to be a tool for me to build myself up and make my life better. No, not at all. I've been trying to make my life better my entire life, and it's only made it worse. I'm incapable of doing anything for myself without screwing it up. This is about complete reduction of self for me. It's about complete destruction of my ego and being a vessel to be in service to others. And that's really what it is. So I'll tell you, I didn't think I'd ever be humble enough to make an amends to a girl who had cheated on me. It's pretty humbling to, you know, look at, well, where was I wrong in that situation? How did I behave in that relationship that maybe led to that behavior? It's not to discount anything, you know, others might have going on, but for me and for my, you know, the purposes of what I'm doing here, it doesn't matter. I need to look at my responsibility no matter what the situation. And I won't say that since I've started going through these steps that every day has been completely filled with God and like everything's been all good. No, God's always there. It's just a matter of whether or not I'm willing to listen, whether or not I'm willing to allow him into my life. and whether or not I'm willing to surrender every day. My best days are when I wake up, say third step prayer, turn my will and my life over to the care of God. Throughout the day, I run the spot check inventory. At the end of the night, I inventory my day and look for situations where I was selfish, resentful, full of fear, and all these things that, all these character defects, all these different things that affect my ego and help it grow larger. When I do those things, while trying to be in service to others every day, my days are good. When I don't do those things, and that happens probably more often than I'd care to admit, but when I don't do those things, my life is in turmoil. Or at least it feels that way in my head. In the past 6 months, I have cried my eyes out to friends wanting to kill myself, wanting to go get on medication again because I've strayed away from God, because I've been selfish, because I've decided to serve myself instead of helping others, because I've chosen to engage and indulge in my ego. And I have this weird pattern where in everything in my life, whether it's going to the gym or trying a new diet or going into with the steps in recovery, like, I go into everything with a passion. I go into everything with a big flair and a lot of enthusiasm. I'm really in it. I do what is necessary to get the results. However, the second I start to feel a little bit of those said results, I let my foot off the gas completely, and I end up in the same place that I was, that same state of despair. It happens with everything. It happens absolutely with everything for me. It's something that I'm working on. I pray to God that He grant me the discipline to stay in a better routine so that I can be a better service to be of more service to others. But it doesn't always happen. It doesn't always happen. You know, I can be totally on fire, helping other guys, looking out and seeing what I can do for others, where I can be of service on Monday. And that felt, you know, whatever happens that day, if I get to be in service, it feels good. So Tuesday, I think I can take off. And then by Wednesday, I'm kind of feeling a little bummed out, but for, you know, at the time, I don't seem to know why. And then by Thursday, I'm like really sad. And by Friday, I'm suicidal and I'm ready to just end it all. That's how it goes for me until I cry to one of my poor friends who has to hear about this over and over again. And they remind me, what are you doing for anybody else? Or are we just going to talk about you all night? And it's a good reminder, man. I'm very blessed to have good friends in my life. I'm very blessed to have a relationship with God today. And again, you know, I'm still working. I'd be lying if I stood up here and said that I have this unbreakable relationship with God. I think He has an unbreakable relationship with me. He's always been there for me. I'm here. You know, not everybody made it here. Everybody in this room who's been through what we've been through is fortunate and blessed to be here. Not everybody has. So, you know, when I don't take that for granted, and when I try to establish that connection with God and basically, like, the way I, you know, was taught to take care of anything that I'm feeling in a negative way, well, if I'm feeling any type of way, selfish, lonely, anything like that, I stop throughout the day, I pray for it to be removed, and then I turn my attention towards somebody else. Because part of the deal that, you know, I made in here going through these steps, it's not a one-sided street. It is a deal. So, you know, God will take care of all these things in my life that I perceive as problems, all these things, loneliness, depression, sadness, frustration at work, all these different things, you know, I perceive them as problems. But the deal is, like, God will continue to take care of me, as he always has, if I'm willing to then go tell more people about Him, if I'm willing to take guys through the steps, if I'm willing to love unconditionally, other individuals and help anywhere I can and be in service and spread that love any way I can. So when I do that, I have to honestly tell you, I'm completely free. The best moments of my life are right after I've been able to help somebody. And I don't take any credit for that because, like, you know, as hopefully you've put together through my story, that's not how Bill thinks. You know, that's not how I think. If I got my way, things would be totally different. But by the grace of God, I'm here with you guys tonight. This isn't the most comfortable thing in the world for me to do, stand up in front of you guys in a suit at a podium. But I will say that, like, I'm willing to do absolutely anything to be in service, hopefully spread a message that impacts somebody in a positive way. And if not, I've been able to get out of my own head for 50 minutes or so. So with that, I really appreciate you guys having me out, and that's all I got. Thanks a lot.